Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace. Andreas, thanks so much for joining me today. I am excited to talk purely about a topic that I've never talked about on this podcast, which is ironic because I use it every day, and that is AI, artificial intelligence. So I'd love to hear, you know, you're an AI guy, but how those two worlds meet is something that most people, either you're in food or you're not, and or you're in tech or you're not. But the combination of the two, I always hear like these tech guys who get into food, but they kind of know everything about tech, but they don't know much about food, and or vice versa. But you're a little unicorn and unique that you spent some time in the restaurant industry, so you know a little bit how it actually works. So dig right into that background story and let people know how you intertwined tech and food.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was born on a farm where food was a really, really, really big thing. I learned to cook from my grandmother at an early age. And then when I was at university, I worked as a line cook because I needed to make some money. And you know how these things often happen. I started as a dishwasher. You're not completely stupid. All of a sudden, you're prepping veggies. And then one day, you know, the guy who was supposed to run the grill station doesn't turn up to work. And, you know, somebody says, here you go, you figure it out. And if you have any kind of talent, I mean, you know this, you know, in kitchens, it's one of those environments where you can actually go up the ranks on merit alone and on hard work alone very, very often. So I did this for a while. And then afterwards, from there, when I finished this university, I thought about staying in hospitality. Like to this day, I love cooking, but I learned really quickly that I love cooking for people I care about. And, you know, the work of a line cook is just so repetitive and so hard. And very often you do stuff that you don't particularly care about. Then I decided to follow up on my studies and I worked in marketing and, was really lucky in focusing in technology at a time when technology was exploding. Worked for this company in London in the UK that worked with all the big tech companies at the time. Autonomy was early AI, early artificial intelligence with Mike Lynch. Worked with early Google, Cisco, all the early, you know, the big names there. And that was an awful lot of fun. From there, I moved to Toronto in Canada about 20 years ago, and I went back to food. I started a freelance business, started a small business where I worked with food brands, marketing, advertising, those kinds of things. And I built this into Canada's largest, with partners, no, it wasn't just me, myself, like the team, we built this into Canada's largest independent food and drink ad agency. Two offices in Montreal, offices in Toronto, some field offices out in Calgary. And I sold that company about 2.5 years ago. And part of the reason why I sold the company was about 5 years ago, I got to play with what's now known to be ChatGPT and Google Gemini. I got to play with an early large language model. And it was two things. It was not very good at all. It was pretty crap, but it was also very, very clearly the future. And you're a founder, you're a business guy yourself. And I'm pretty sure you're familiar with the 3 o'clock in the morning panic attacks where you wake up and, like, you know, you're just terrified that everything you've built is about to come crashing down. And you know, you're sweaty and scared and worried. And I was thinking to myself, all the work I've done over the last 12, 13 years, I can see a lot of that work getting taken away from us by computers, like doing things by these Gen AI models. And then I thought to myself, well, what can I do to drive that change rather than being driven by that change? Like, you know, what can I do to turn this around? And I couldn't figure out a way to do it within the confines of this company I had built, because it had an income model, it had a whole bunch of staff, and that staff relied on me to pay their mortgages and, you know, their rent and make a living. And so when the opportunity came to let that go and have somebody else run this company and take care of all of these people, I took that opportunity and I started from scratch. And the company I run now is called Six Seeds. It's from the Greek myth of Persephone and the six seeds that brought the harvest. So we started with data and AI at a foundational level. So we buy data from a variety of data partners. We have data flow into the company from retailers, from food service, from homes. So for example, you know, we have data that comes in from all the retailers, not just Canada, but Canada, the US, Mexico, Brazil, most of Europe, India and Australia has just come online. So we have all these data flow in. Then the same thing as with food service. So we know what's on menus. We know what people are buying from those menus, when they're buying it, how often they're buying it, all those kinds of things. And then we have data coming in from people's homes. So for example, data from smart fridges, data from Pinterest boards, and all this that gets cross-referenced against data from social media conversation, the public conversation. And what this allows us to do, it allows us to understand what people are eating, really what they're eating rather than what they say they're eating, because people will lie to you with like the greatest possible confidence. When they're eating it, how they're eating it, and the whole sort of motivation around it. And one of the things we say we do, we close the say-do gap, because if I ask people in, I don't know, a focus group or on social media, so do you care about organic food? Oh, yes, I love organic food. Eat nothing else, right? And then when you look at the data, why people are really eating is affordability, availability, and taste. Those are the three big drivers of food consumption in North America, right? Specifically with rising food prices as we're experiencing right now. And so for our clients, what we do with all this data and AI that we have access to in a nutshell is we help them create products that people want to buy, because we understand the triggers that are behind, you know, what people are interested in, and we help them create marketing that people want to interact with. And so that overlap of data and food and a genuine love for food, that's where I'm at home.
So I want to take a step back for folks. I understand everything you said. I don't know if everyone listening might understand. So we mentioned things like LLM, large language model, right? Maybe dig into a little bit, we don't have to go too in the weeds because we could really lose people there, but kind of what that means, you know, people will hear it's built on an LLM and it's got to learn and it's got to do things. So maybe talk about some of the beginnings of what the foundation of AI really is. And then we can kind of go from there of how it can really benefit, you know, obviously you're at a larger scale, food manufacturer production, but, and then even talking about from an operator standpoint and the everyday. So let's start with the LLM.
Yeah, I mean, LLMs are large language models, as they're called. They are, you know, when you have your phone and on your phone you have autocorrect. So you're sending a text and it sort of autocorrects everything and all that kind of jazz. So it kind of predicts what the next word should be based on what the word that you've been typing in, right? An LLM, and if we have any engineers in your listeners, they will scream right now and tell you it doesn't work like that. It's far more complicated, and they're right. But an LLM is that, but a lot more, right? So a large language model, AI, ChatGPT, doesn't understand what it's talking about the way you and I understand. But instead, what it does, you put something in, and because it has eaten all the publicly available content of the internet, everything that was out there, it has a really good idea. I'm going to say, well, in the context of what's coming in, the most likely output is this. And then it says, well, based on the output I've just created, the most likely output that should follow what I've just created should be this. And that's one layer, that's the creation layer. And then the large language models, they have another layer on top, and that layer checks in with its training. that says, well, based on what I know, what you've just created looks good or it doesn't look good and needs to be adjusted or it doesn't need to be adjusted. So it's a prediction. It's a prediction engine. And this is where the hallucinations come in, right? Because it doesn't understand. It doesn't know what it's talking about. Like, you can go to ChatGPT and you can convince ChatGPT that strawberry, the word strawberries, has five R's in it. And it'll agree with you. It'll say, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Of course, it's five R's in it. And that's because it doesn't have an understanding, a deep understanding, the way we understand what we're talking about when it puts information out. But what AI is really, really, really good at, and where the strengths comes in, it's really good at understanding and dissecting large data sets. So, for example, if you have certain patterns in large data that are where the data is simply too large for a human being to make sense of, AI is a really, really, really good helper there. We, in our practice, we use two words to keep those things apart. And one of those words is called meaning making, making meaning out of something. And the other word is called sense making. And meaning making is, you're wearing a black hat. From a utility point of view, you could equally wear a red hat or a blue hat or a green hat, but you're wearing a black hat because it pleases you. It's a decision you've made this morning. It's like, oh, it's a black hat kind of a day, and it's a white sweatshirt kind of a day. And, you know, that's how I feel today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here in Toronto, it's a little bit cold, so I'm wearing a warm, comfortable, woolly sweater. I'm working from home today. I don't have to, you know, I don't have any clients meeting, so I don't have to wear a suit or anything. And those are just decisions we make as a human being that are not driven by any rationality, right? I mean, again, you know, I could wear a yellow sweater or a green sweater, same functionality. I'm wearing this one because I like this color. So that's meaning making. That is like deciding on what matters, deciding on where we wish to go, deciding on what makes us happy, deciding on the things that make us human. And then AI comes in, and AI is really good at sense making. Well, here is data that says that, I don't know, you know, wool, like, you know, sheep's wool is more environmentally friendly than nylon, or I don't know. I'm making this up. I don't know if this is true, you know, or any other things. Or so it helps you after you as a human being, after you have decided what's important, where I want to go with my food business or with anything else in my life. You can then use AI and AI's capacity and capability to digest and organize and present large amounts of data in many different varieties. You can then use that capability and capacity to help it to reach your human goals. And that's where the value comes in. Where AI goes terribly wrong, and when people come and say, AI sucks, I've tried it and it's awful, it doesn't work, it's terrible, why do you think this works? This typically happens when people say to AI, do this for me. You do this, you know, and they outsource to AI. And you can't do this. Just because you have AI, that doesn't mean that you don't have to do the work.
Right. I was just going to say that you have to, from what I have found, again, when we're talking foundational levels now, and again, we'll build into what, you know, you at Succeeds, what you guys are doing, but you have to teach it to a degree. Like, that large language model has to understand what, you know, it's called prompting, right? You have to be able to prompt, and it's almost a whole nother language in and of itself, right? There's conversation of you and I, there's another thing of telling a computer, hey, I do this for me. I input a command, you output, you know, a result, but now you have to prompt AI to what you're actually trying to achieve, right? So, you know, for example, you know, I use ChatGPT, and, you know, you can build in pre-prompts. You can say who you are, what you do, how long you've done it, so that way it has an understanding. And you can also tell it other factors of, you know, I want you to start to learn how I write. I want you to understand how I read. It may ask for examples, and what I have found is the best is, tell me what you need to know to be able to give me this output. And that way it starts to ask you the questions, because then it has its own little internal memory, if you will. And, you know, and then you can start to spit out the data that you're trying to achieve. And like you said, rather than trying to keep it all up in here, it can collect, organize all of that data and then be able to spit it out. For example, this past week, I had an event and it was taking information out of a cookbook. Well, I was able to just take the PDF version of said cookbook, load it in and say, hey, here's a cookbook that I'm going to be working out of. I need you to be able to scale effectively this recipe. And that's exactly what it did. I said, I have 30 people coming. Here's my assumed eating ratio. You know, not all 30 people are going to eat 30 portions of whatever you're making. And I need you to scale these recipes. So it does. And then I say, create me a recipe or a grocery list. Spits me out a grocery list all combined. So that way, and it even then gives me it by category. So when I go to the store, I'm in the produce section. This is what you need for your all the recipes combined. And it makes it very simple versus that manual labor of, let me open a cookbook. Okay, let me find the sub recipe. Let me scale that recipe up. Okay, I have all those ingredients. Okay, but I need that ingredient in two recipes. Now I need to make sure that I add those together. It can do all that. And we're talking seconds. Like it can talk so fast.
And what happened now, if you think about this, right, when we go meaning making, sense making, it allowed you as a human creative being to focus on the things you're good at. This is what I want to achieve. These are the people I want to feed. That's the experience I want to create. And then you say, here you go, my little electronic minion. You figure all the stuff out that needs to be figured out by a computer. Mm-hmm. And I can continue to make the human experience stronger and better, right? That's the important thing. And the better your guardrails, I think you said something really important there. The better your guardrails early on, the more you tell ChatGPT, for argument's sake, this is who I am, this is who I want you to be, the more you hem it in and say, here you go, the better the results will be. And the longer you work with it, the more it remembers about you, the better the results will be. I mean, one of the things that I do when one of the ways my workflow has changed in the last 6 months or even in the last 3 months, when I used to brainstorm by myself, as in not with colleagues, not with coworkers, when I was just trying to figure stuff out in my head, I used to write stuff down. And use, you know, I don't know, post-it notes and stick them on the wall and all this kind of stuff. I don't do that anymore. I put my headphones on, I put our dog in a leash, and I go for a walk, and I say, I put ChatGPT into voice mode, and the new voice mode is just fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I say, so here's something I want to figure out, and I want you to listen to me, ChatGPT, not you. I want you to listen to me, and I ramble. And I say, well, you know, this is where this could go, or this where this could go, or it could go here. And then after, like, I don't know, 10 minutes of talking, I say to ChatGPT, I want you to figure out where are the patterns in what I've just talked about, and what do you have to add to the information I just gave you? And almost every single time I come home with a clear way forward. Right, with a skeleton. Again, this is not AI doing the work for me. It's AI doing the work with me.
Right. No, I love what you said there. I've always been a big component of I have to have others to bounce the ideas off. And I never thought of just talking and saying, listen to me and bounce things back off. I never thought of it in that way as something that can kind of take, again, it has all the knowledge for the most part of the web, right? It has everything at your fingertips, or it knows, especially the newest iteration, it can actually pull from the web. So rather than doing searches and whatnot, that I never even thought of using it in that context to be able to, you know, collect my thoughts and put them into one place versus typing them out. And like you said, the voice powered, it makes it even that much easier. You can sit there and talk, and it's gotten so good. I remember the early days of, you know, think of the iPhone and Siri, and you'd say something and it couldn't get anything right. No, I didn't say that. Now it pretty well knows exactly what you're saying. Even if you stumble your words, it knows that that's like a mistake. And what you then said is what you're actually trying to capture. It's fascinating how they've been able to layer this. But kind of going back to the food service piece of it, you know, what challenges have you kind of encountered integrating AI into the food sector? you know, I know the big players usually adopt technology sooner than others, but as a whole, I don't think the food industry uses it as much as they should. Again, it's usually larger companies or food manufacturers, equipment manufacturers that might. So what kind of challenges have you seen, you know, in that or out of that, that we've been having in this industry?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the problem is when you're running a small food service outlet, right? When you're running a restaurant, when you're perhaps running a mom and pop restaurant or something reasonably small, you're probably already working 18 hours a day, right? I mean, you are probably at the market, you're buying ingredients, somebody's doing the books. It just never stops. And so the unfortunate thing is that a lot of the people who could benefit the most from this, who could really have help running their business that they never had access to before, frequently they just don't have the resource to learn all these new tricks, right? And I'm kind of hoping that, I mean, part of the reason why I think podcasts like yours are so valuable, that hopefully they'll encourage people to say, well, I'm going to explore this a little bit more because there is real value in it for me, right? But I mean, when I talk to chefs, and I think a lot of chefs are also people who like to work with their hands, right? Mm-hmm. There is a tactileness, there's a sensuality about feeding people, about preparing food. And a fair number of chefs I've talked to, they basically told me that they feel they would never use computers because it feels disconnected from who they are and what they do. But if you have a business partner, if you have somebody who runs or whose job it is to run the business, I think that is probably the more logical place to start. I can't tell you who it is, but we have worked with a very exceptionally well-known television personality chef. He's a global celebrity. And until 6 months ago, I want to say 90% of the content that was developed for books and for television and for all the series out there were resting on his shoulders. It all came from him. It's like, you know, where is this coming from? Well, let's go ask that particular person. And his organization started using data and AI and AI generated ideas about 6-7 months ago. And I know from conversations that this has been a total game changer to the stress level. It has been a total game changer from, well, what are we going to put out and what do people really want to watch? And it has just made the life of the entire team so much better, because now there isn't this bottleneck who this one person represents. And then for this person, there isn't this gigantic amount of stress that every single decision was on his shoulders, right? So even for the large organization, even for large restaurant chains and, you know, somebody who runs an international business, there is still this frequent observation that food shouldn't be computerized, food can't be AI-ified. But I think you can have the best of both worlds. You know, if you can see trends coming up, like people care about this, people care about this, then it can really help you to put together a menu that people can connect with. And I mean, for example, I mean, you have probably also noticed, chocolate prices are through the roof, right?
Yep.
600-700% right now, yep, from the beginning of the year.
Yep.
So what happens if you're running a small patisserie? What are you going to do? Are you going to raise your prices? Are you going to eat it and it'll eat into your profits? Who are you going to ask, right? But if you have access to AI, like to an AI mentor or helper, perhaps what you can work with is saying something simple, is saying, look, I have the following products that I'm selling. My production costs are up, I don't know, 75% because of the chocolate that's included in those things. And my coffee, my chocolate price has gone from X to Y. It's about 600% higher than it used to be. Help. I need ideas, right? And the AI will have ideas. Not all of them will be good. Not all of them will be practical. Not all of them will be doable. But it'll get you out of the oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit face, where you're just standing there helplessly looking at the numbers on a spreadsheet.
Well, it takes you out of the box and it gives you a set of tools that you otherwise wouldn't even think about, right? Because you can put in, back to my personal experience, it's the same thing. You know, before there was AI, it was called the Flavor Bible, right? It has every ingredient. You need to pair things because you need umami, sweet, salty, spicy. You want everything in a dish, crunchy. You know, you're using that book to kind of navigate that. Well, now you don't need to navigate because it's at your fingertips. You can say, this is what I'm looking to achieve. And there's plenty of times that I'm like, I need, you know, X client. This is what they like. I need ideas. And it spits out some things. I'm like, absolutely not. I would never put that together. But I can refine, going back to those prompts and those guardrails, I can refine that information to a level that it starts to whittle it down. And rather than something that's taking, you know, 4 hours to ideate because you're trying to go back and forth and figure it out and like, will this work? Will that work? You can just ask an AI model and it's going to tell you, yes, it will. No, it won't. Here's why it will. Here's why it won't. And you use your own knowledge. It's an amplification. That's what I always tell people. They're so worried about AI is going to take our jobs. Well, I think it's going to make people's jobs more efficient. They're going to be able to effectively do what they do better, faster, not necessarily eliminate, and it's going to create other jobs. I don't remember who it said, but you know what happened in, you know, the early, was it 1900, when tractors were invented, right? Everyone was doing horse and buggy. Oh my God, we're never going to be able to farm because all these machines are taking over. No, it just amplified what was being done, not taken away, actually created different jobs in a different way. And so that's kind of what I see. And when I talk to chefs and they're like, nah, I don't, like you said, I don't like that computer stuff and that's too difficult. I ask them, how long does it take to come up with the menu idea? And they're like, oh, it could take 4 or 5 a day, a week. I'm like, why? There's no reason for it to take that long. In addition to creativity and there's a lot of, you know, plugins and things that we can layer on top. And, you know, most chefs aren't going to go that deep, but you have that capability that it can start to do things to a degree for you, with you as kind of the, yes, that's what I want. Type go person.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I mean, yeah, everything, repeating myself a little bit here, but AI is a tool, is a tool, is a tool, right? And you're absolutely bang on, you know? I mean, some jobs will disappear, no doubt about it, right? You know, for example, I mean, going back to your farm example, there used to be a blacksmith in every village, right? And you took your horse there to have your horse shoot, and that's gone, that's gone away. You know, there's a whole bunch of jobs that don't exist anymore. But I'd like to think that a whole bunch of these blacksmiths learned how to maintain a diesel engine, right? And they turned the smithy into early mechanic stores where, you know, you brought your tractor in and you got your tractor serviced, right? Because there are transferable skills there. I saw this somewhere and I don't have the exact number in my head, so don't quote me on this. But I read somewhere recently that 50 years ago, 75% of the jobs that are in today's census document didn't even exist, right? And that jobs, I mean, IT consultants, right? I mean, that wasn't a thing. Or, you know, somebody who builds electric cars or, you know, space, whatever, people. None of these, you know, solar panel installers.
Right.
None of these things existed because the technology wasn't there and we were doing different things altogether. And then today it's probably really difficult to find somebody who can look after a steam engine really well, right? Because those jobs went away with the steam engine. But as you said, other jobs make an appearance, other expertise is needed. And I always think that you have two choices. You can allow yourself, you can complain. You can say, well, everything's terrible. And, you know, it wasn't like that when I was young. And that's true. It was different. But you have the ability, I think most of us have the ability and have the capacity to use these tools in a way that we achieve the goals that are important to us.
Yeah, 100%. So how do you all then, you know, if you can give, it doesn't, again, it doesn't be a specific example, but how you're taking data and how you're then utilizing that for your customer base to make the decisions, you know, how, what kind of turnaround times are we looking at with the data? Because we almost have real time stuff, but what does that look like, or some sort of example of how they've implemented said data? I know you talked about that chef, but maybe, you know, another example.
Yeah. So I do two things. So I have Succeeds, my company that's is, and we work for, typically we work for challenger brands, right? People who aren't the Nestle's of this world, people who aren't the Johnson & Johnson's or the Kraft Heinz, because those guys, they have this licked, every single one of them, right? They are super slick. They all have their AI. They have, for the longest time, they've been working with AI. This is nothing new for them. So we work with the level below this to level the playing field for those and help challenger brands to compete on equal playing field. And that's an ongoing process. And that is a relatively complicated process because you're dealing with a lot of different inputs, their data inputs. And then from then you create an insight, and then this insight then needs to be translated into product. So for example, one of the biggest upheavals that I've ever seen in the food industry that is happening right now, and that all the big brands are taking very, 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 very seriously, and almost none of the challenger brands have even acknowledged to be a thing, is Ozempic, GLP-1 drugs.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely massive. If you go to Kraft Heinz, if you go to Nestle, if you go to PepsiCo, they are all working on this. If you talk to Walmart, Walmart says that people who are on Ozempic, their basket size typically gets reduced by a third. Now, that's a third less income for Walmart for people who are on Ozempic.
Right.
The big guys are bringing out specific sized food. They're bringing out food that's high in protein, high in fiber, that works with people who take GLP-1 drugs. And the smaller companies are merely ignoring it for reasons, you know, they don't have the time, it's not on their radar, et cetera, et cetera. And so that is just one really, 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 really big thing that you need to stay on top. We're currently working with three different companies, helping them develop Ozempic specific food product that help people who are on Ozempic to live healthy lives. Another project we're currently working on is another company we're helping them produce food products that have natural ESL. They have natural regulators that help the body to release their own GLP-1 as much as possible. So there's really, really interesting conversations happening. So that's an example of, I want to say, big stuff. And then the other thing I'm doing, I'm a co-founder in a company called GoCPG. And GoCPG, who are currently in the sort of pre-release phase with this, it is an AI-powered mentor for people who are launching food and drink businesses, from restaurants to small, you know, food businesses. And what we're doing there, we've collected data and wisdom about what it takes like to start a food business. Because there are lots of steps that are the same. You know, there are lots of steps that you need to know. This is how margins work. This is what distributors looking for. This is what retailers looking for. This is how commercial lease works. Like, there's a lot of those things that are repeatable.
Yeah.
And, you know this. The failure rate in food and drink is astronomical. It's around 82%. And part of the reason why this failure rate is so high is because the majority of people who launch food businesses, they launch those businesses from first principles, meaning they have to learn how to start a food business from scratch. Mm-hmm. And if you learn something from first principles, if you're an organism that learns everything from first principles, you're eating all the poisonous berries along the way.
Right.
You don't know to say, well, there's a, you know, that berry will give me, make me throw up, or that berry here might even kill my business. You don't know this because there's nobody there to teach you.
Right.
But the truth of the matter is, this is this knowledge that's out there. And an AI-powered mentor can say, hey, Jeff, what are you starting? Well, I want to launch the following business. Okay. How much are you buying your ingredients for? Well, I'm paying $6 a pop. Amazing. How much are you selling your product for? Well, I'm selling it for $7 a pop. Let me tell you, this needs to be improved. But you know what I mean? And
yeah.
This is what AI is really good at. Right? It works with you. You provide the dream and the goal. And because there are so many steps in there that are not unique, because food business, there is uniqueness in the idea very often, but the execution works within an existing system, right? There are distributors, there are retailers, there are ingredient providers, there are taxes to be paid, there are labor costs, etc., etc. And a lot of those are predictable. And so the AI there, what it does, it helps people to understand those things and to flourish within the system. And those are things where AI can be really, really, really useful.
Yeah. Going back to the GLP-1, because I wanted to ask, do you think that, or maybe they already are, but are they going to start marketing products, you know, some sort of symbol or something to come out to say, you know, GLP-1 friendly? And will those products...
It has already started.
Has it? I haven't seen anything personally, but I didn't know what the marketing strategy, if they're really going to almost to the point of, maybe it's not this extreme, but you know, you go to the grocery store now and you have the section that's gluten-free, or you have the all plant-based area, right? They try to keep some of those things together just so it's easy for the consumer to be like, ah, here's the section that I know I can play within.
100%.
They're going to, okay.
Are you familiar with Smoothie King?
Yeah.
Yeah, Smoothie King has just launched GLP-1 smoothies.
Wow.
Right? And it's exactly what you've just said. I think your comparison to gluten-free is bang on, 100% bang on. That's a really, 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 really good comparison. There will be a GLP-1 section in the retailers, and it won't take long. I mean, we're already seeing the beginning, and it would not surprise me if within the next 3 to 6 months at major retailers, we see a shelf that says GLP-1 friendly foods.
Wow, that fast. I mean, if you think about today's world, things are moving so fast. It's not what it used to be where it takes, you know, years for things. I mean, it's almost instantaneous with the data that's available. Like to your point, when you can collect all the data from everywhere, from all these point of sale systems, from purchasing, and you can see what everybody is doing, it clearly points a path. And then the AI can then take that data and really decipher it and say, this is what it means, versus that, you know, and it's kind of black and white, right? This is what the data points say, not a human saying, well, yeah, you know, GLP-1s, you know, I hear about that and I hear about Ozempic, but, you know, that's just a fad. And I don't believe in that, right? That's a personal belief, not data-driven decision. Whereas they're using sheer data to drive these models to truly say, no, that's what the consumers actually want, because this is what's happening in the real world.
Exactly. You know, and part of what we're seeing is with those kinds of things is, again, the big guys, they have the data and they are 100% data driven. Now, both the outgoing and the incoming administration in the US are looking at obesity as a major health marker. And I don't know if you saw Elon Musk just tweeted or X'd or whatever you want to call it. He said the biggest thing you can do for public health in the US, and I disagree with Musk on many things, but this one I agreed with him. I said, you know, the biggest thing you could do for public health in the US is make GLP-1 drugs cheaper than they currently are and make them widely available. In Europe, a month's supply of Ozempic or a related drug is around $100. In the US, it's $1,200. And that's all to do with the insane health insurance system that has been built over the last 40 years.
Yeah. That's a whole set of conversation for
completely different conversation. Oh, you know, as a non-American, I will never comment on US politics because that's not my job. But US health insurance system is insane. you know, whichever way you look at it, there is so much money wasted there. It's not even funny. But anyway, be that as it may, both the outgoing and the incoming administration are looking at obesity as a health marker. And GLP-1 drugs, for the very, very first time, have achieved something that we've always dreamt of but were never able to do. You don't need willpower anymore, or you need a lot less willpower. And I don't know if you followed the reduction in share price of Weight Watchers. Mm-mm. From the beginning of the year 2024 to where we are now, the 19th of December, they have lost 87% of their value. Wow. Weight Watchers shares, right? They try to reposition themselves as a GLP-1 drug provider and companion almost. But people very clearly figured out that the value of that was not equivalent to the additional cost that was involved with that. And so they just went to the doctor and got the GLP-1 from there, right? Or they got either they paid, have the insurance pay for it, or people are paying privately for it. And so there are a lot of storms right now in the food industry. There is the demand for coffee exceeds the available harvest by around 27% right now.
Wow.
So coffee prices are going to skyrocket. The demand for chocolate, we've already talked about. You know, I think it's 700% increase in price over the last couple of months. Olive oil, honey, like all of these things is where we have demand exceeding what can reasonably be delivered. And that leads to a number of things, leads to increased prices, leads to a lot of fakes in the market as well. You know, I want to say at least 50, if not more, percent of all olive oil that you buy in the open market isn't olive oil. It's adulterated in some fashion.
Yeah.
Most of it is old and rancid, you know, when you open it. And that really all has to do with the fact that food security, the kind of food security that we've all grown up with, is under threat to a degree that we've never experienced before. And at the cook level, at the restaurant level, at the food service level, where you're feeding things and when you're working with razor thin margins, right? Mm-hmm. Feeding that information into an AI helper can really make the difference between a restaurant surviving or failing. You know, here are my prices from my greengrocer. Well, how much am I paying for cauliflower? How much am I paying for potatoes? How much am I paying for onions, right? And if you keep track, as you should if you're running a restaurant, if you keep track of your ingredient costs and you feed that spreadsheet a year into this, and then perhaps if you're a little bit clever, then you grab yourself a year's weather data, which is easily downloadable off the internet, and then you say to AI, compare my ingredient cost to the weather data in the US, in California, in Florida, mm-hmm. And then you see the correlations there, and then you may say, well, let's focus on cauliflower over, I don't know, broccoli, and I, you know, whatever. But the AI can help you to optimize your menu for health, for taste, for consumer trends, but it certainly can help optimize your menu for profitability. You know, I mean, I was in a restaurant on, what is it today? Thursday, on Tuesday night. Two Michelin stars, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful food. And the tasting menu was very, very vegetable forward. And that wasn't a bad thing. It was a fantastic tasting menu, don't get me wrong. But it was very vegetable forward. And I snuck to the, I know the chef in this place. And so at the end of, we were there with the client, at the end of the meal, I popped into the kitchen. And I said, so I noticed. And he starts laughing and I said, did you notice bad or did you notice good? And I said, no, I noticed because I know. But he said, yeah. He said, we need to make sure we're making money on these.
Yeah. You have to be able to make profit. And, you know, again, I had an event earlier this week, and it was a smart class talking about technology in the kitchen. Obviously, AI is one component, but then also using smart equipment. And obviously, there's tons of software built on top of AI to help particular, you know, whether that is inventory management, tied into your POS, production sheets. There's a lot out there. So, you know, I don't want to say any names of any companies, but there's a lot out there to help a restaurant. But what we were talking about is, like you said, food's going to continue to go up. It's not coming down. Labor is going to continue to go up. It's not coming down. So what, you know, what can we control? Well, we can control our labor costs if we properly analyze when our business is happening and being able to, do I need three people or do I only need two people? Right. And then from a food production standpoint, okay, how do I optimize my food production schedule, et cetera, to match that, right? So we can drop, you know, I go into too many kitchens and I just see overproduction. And it's like, okay, why do you have 12 extra sandwiches? Well, we didn't want to run out. Well, not running out isn't going to be an option anymore because you're going to be out of business because 12 sandwiches, and that's one item, over a continued period of time, that's just money thrown away in the garbage. And too many aren't paying attention to that because in the past, you could get away with it, right? There was just enough that, well, we'll overproduce a little bit and we'll get by. Obviously, those that are making the money figured that out and have very tight structures. I know when I was in the kitchen, I was very tight on production. It's just wasted labor, not to mention product. You're wasting all the labor to make all that food when you don't need to because there's so much technology out there to help us, not including, we haven't even touched it, you know, I talk a lot about equipment, but you could get away with the kitchen with a few pieces of equipment versus having all this stuff that you think you need because a traditional kitchen has it. You don't need it anymore. And the oven is smarter than you are and can almost, you know, it can take the person that doesn't know how to cook. And, you know, I yesterday made a piece of picanha and it had a beautiful fat cap on it, but I needed to like crisp that up. I was able to literally hit a button and say that, you know, it product with crackling, and it literally cooked it to the perfect internal temperature, crisped up the outside perfectly, and I didn't have to, all I had to do was stick the thermometer in it because I told it that's where I wanted to be, and it did all the work for me.
Yeah, and you know, if you can get yourself as an operator, right, if you can get yourself in your heart and in your execution to a point where you can make data your friend. And let's say, you know, let's say you're running a catering business, right? And let's say you can say every job you do, you put into a spreadsheet, who am I doing this for? How old are they? How many women, how many men, how many children? And then at the end of it, you figure out, well, how much was there left over? Mm-hmm. And then you put in, what kind of occasion was it? Was it a wedding? Was it a, I don't know, christening? Was it some sort of garden party? And you put those things in. And then again, you put the weather on top and other external things, right? And then you do this for 6 months. And then the next job comes in and you say, well, I have a wedding with X number of men, X number of women. It's going to be a sunny day, yada, yada. It's not an event. Tell me what to produce. The AI will be able to look through your data and say, well, based on how things were in the last year, you need to make sure you have the following amount of food there. And as you say, that stops you from overproducing. It makes sure you put the right things in. You know, perhaps from the feedback, you can say, well, you know what? Whenever I buy oysters, there are three people who love them and they gorge themselves, but there's 10 people who just walk away from them. So maybe that's something that I'm known for, but perhaps it makes no sense anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm one of the people who will eat all the oysters when nobody else does. But
100%. I'm right there with you. I am right there with you. My wife all the time yells at me and says, don't eat that. And I'm like, I'll take my chances. I love my oysters. Couple more things that I want to touch on because I know we're rolling up on time. But, you know, somebody, I guess maybe we've touched on it here and there, but what advice would you give to those professionals? Yeah, it could be a chef, operator, food company. You know, what can they do to incorporate AI into their business, into their daily life? Something very simple, something that they could, you know, listen to this and literally get on their computer, their phone, and just execute. That's going to help them today.
Yeah, I mean, put your menu into ChatGPT. right? I mean, honestly, put your menu. See, I think a lot of people think ChatGPT is only good for typing, right? But that's not true. You know, you can have now, you have vision mode in your phone, right? ChatGPT, your app on your phone, you have vision mode where it connects to your company. But the very first thing is, I would say, put your menu into ChatGPT as it is. Tell ChatGPT who you are and what's important it is for you. And that's just in the settings. You just say, tell me, you know, this is what I want to do. This is, and you may say things like, profitability isn't that important to me. You may say, you know, what's really important to me is that people know me for the quality of my, I don't know, my baked goods. I'm a pastry chef. Right. And it's really important for me, the highest possible thing. And for as long as I can make a living, I'm good. So do not recommend anything that isn't French butter because it's irrelevant for me. So tell ChatGPT what's important to me, what you're trying to achieve. Or you may say, look, I'm running a diner. I'm running on absolute razor thin margins already. I don't want to raise my prices because the people in my community, they don't have much money. But I'm providing a valuable space for the community to come together. And it's important for me to stay this way. And then you upload your menu. And then you ask ChatGPT, based on the things I've just told you, optimize my menu. You may not like the results. Right? ChatGPT might tell you to make your burger smaller. Or it might give you other things that you may not like. But at least now you have an opportunity to check this out. Right? Or you may say, well, you know, here are my specials. Here are my daily specials I've been running. Let's say you're running a diner or something. So here's my Friday, my Thursday, my Thanksgiving. You know, my locals would kill me. My regulars would kill me if I sort of move those around. But maybe one day a week, I run something that's new and interesting to get new people in. And you do this. Or you say, you're running a restaurant and you say, everybody who eats in my restaurant is 60 years and older, and they're all dying off. And my income has halved in the last 10 years. Here's my menu. Without overtaxing my kitchen, which is used to this menu, add 5 dishes that I can market to a younger audience. Mm-hmm. Right? So I think the important thing, if you are new to AI, if you are a chef or an owner operator, or even if you're running a small chain, is to talk to ChatGPT, talk to AI. And I think most people will use ChatGPT because it's everywhere, or Gemini, Google Gemini, it doesn't matter. Don't go to your AI and say, well, this is what I do. This is what I want to do. And then when the first answer isn't perfect, don't take your phone and go, well, that's crap. That's useless. This AI shit. I keep telling you it's shit. Like, why am I even bothering? When the first answer comes back and it says, your burgers are unsustainable. You should go vegan. Ah, terrible idea. Why are you even telling me this? Okay. Listen, I'm not going vegan. I hate vegan restaurants, not what I stand for, not an option. What else can we do? Well, your menu currently has 150 items on them. Of those 150 items, that means from a ingredient cost, we need the following things. We need like 500 ingredients, mm-hmm. 300 of which are rotting in your cold storage because you're not making enough of those. So will the AI say, how about we reduce your menu? Can I keep my meat? You can keep your meat. But let's reduce it from 150 to 50. You okay with 50? You okay with 25? Never. 50. All right, let's work on 50. But I mean, that's how you can work with the AI.
Right.
No. Step by step.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. Yeah, plug in your menu, put in some information. And if you don't know what to ask, ask the AI, what do you need to know? Because this is what I ultimately want to do. And it will tell you, answer these questions. It'll give you 10 questions. And you can literally put 1, give it an answer. 2, an answer. 3, an answer. 4, an answer. And then it will give you that. One of my little hacks that I have built in as a prompt is, when I ask you something or I need something, if what I tell you doesn't register at an 8 out of 10, like from a this makes sense and you worded it well and I have enough information, I want you to ask me what is needed and or how would you change what I asked you for this prompt to be an 8 or higher. And that has been a game changer for me, because sometimes I'm not articulate with what, you know, is up here. I'm trying to, you know, say it, but I don't know how to get it out. And it tells you, and or sometimes it prompts itself, and then it will answer that. And I'm like, yes, that's what I wanted. And yeah, then it gives me the answer by just me telling it, ask that. So you can always do something like that. Okay, last thing. We've talked trends. You're in the biz of trends because you've got data. What are the top three trends that you see, you know, right at the end of 2024? Maybe two-parter. Did the trends that you saw or thought were going to happen this year happen? Again, maybe two or three. And then what would you say are going to be probably some of the top three trends in the food industry going into 2025?
So we're going to start with that last question, that answer to the last question. The two big ones right now that I'm seeing is GLP-1 is a thing, right? 16% of the U.S. population has been or currently is on GLP-1 drugs. Predictions are about 35% of U.S. residents population could benefit from GLP. They could benefit from losing weight, right? So that is a massive market in there. I would suggest to have, if you run a restaurant that has any, not even if you are health focused, like, you know, I would try this. You know, you said something early on, what you would try. Let's say you're running a small, I don't know, you know, if you about your listenership, but if you have small owner operators who are listening to this, I would ask you to try one thing. Research a GLP-1 friendly dish, and I guarantee you it will be high in fiber, high in nutrients, high in protein. Put it on your menu and say, this is GLP-1 friendly. Make sure it's female friendly, right? So don't make it a massive steak, because 65% of all GLP-1 patients are women between 50 and 60 years old.
Okay.
Right? That's the GLP-1 market. So that is one thing I would say you can do with AI that is absolutely on trend. The other thing that we're seeing is high and low. Luxury is doing incredibly well. Like, high-end wine sales are through the roof in the last year. But lower and normal, like, you know, the average wines, they are suffering. So either you can do something that's really, really, really affordable, really cheap, right? Where you do something that is, I don't know, the best grilled cheese food truck in the world, and it's like $1 or $2 per grilled cheese sandwich, you will do well. Or you go very, very much to the high end, and there is money in there as well. And if you are asking for a food trend that we've observed that came true, alcohol-free, right? Non-alcoholic drinks, non-alcoholic beers, non-alcoholic wine is beginning to be less terrible than it has been. And it's beginning to catch up with the quality for non-alcoholic beer. I don't drink alcohol. I stopped drinking alcohol 5 years ago. I stopped drinking because I did a dry October, I think it was. Sober November? I can't remember. It was a month. And after that month, I slept better. I had lost weight. I had way more patience with my children. And I felt better all the way around. So I never went back to drinking. I still have a glass of champagne, my wife's birthday, or, you know, at Christmas or whatever. Yeah. But I don't drink. Like, you know, I don't come home and open a bottle of wine and have a glass of wine after work, which is what I used to do. My wife and I, you know, it's like, sit down, the kids are in bed, you're watching a movie together, say, shall I open a bottle of wine? Oh, that would be lovely. And we don't do that anymore. Wow. You know, we replaced it with other habits, like with, I don't know, you know, some lovely, beautiful tea or, you know,
a glass. That's what I did. I switched out to tea. I drink a tea every single night, and then I've been playing with different honeys that are available to kind of change that experience. And like you mentioned, honey being one of those things. I know the pain of price on the honey. So
yeah, but you know, I found, which is interesting, what you've just said, I found that What I missed about drinking wine wasn't so much the wine, but it was the ritual. You know, the kids are in bed, the plop of the cork, the pouring of the wine, and I found that I could replace that ritual with the ritual of making really nice tea.
Right. Yeah, it's a whole right. It's its own process, right? Especially if you're doing loose leaf and you're steeping it properly, and you want your water temperature where it needs to be, and how long does it steep for, and then what are you adding to it after the fact, and how fast you drink it or slow. Yeah, there's a lot of things. I never thought I'd be like a tea guy. I never thought I'd be a tea guy, and I don't know why. I just started drinking tea at night, and it just put me in a good mood, right? I can have it about 7:30. Usually it's something with chamomile, something to kind of just tone it down. And then by the time bed rolls around, it kind of helps just put me off into the sunset. It's nothing crazy, but just enough.
I'm a certified tea sommelier. I took a tea sommelier course with a certification.
Okay, then we need to talk a little bit more about some tea in the future, because I am slowly learning the ways of tea and just getting into it. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, my wife gave me the course as a Christmas present. And I didn't, but when I took the course, I didn't sleep for 3 months because it was an evening course, and you drink even though you're spitting it out again, but you're ingesting an awful lot of tea. And of course, tea has caffeine in it, you know, so you come home 11 o'clock at night. It was from 8 to 11, four nights a week, and you're buzzing and you're up till 3 o'clock in the morning. But it was absolutely worth it. But, you know, those are things, again, back to your question, you know, if you're running a restaurant right now, my suggestion would be GLP-1, take it seriously, learn more about it, put some dishes on your menu. Have alcohol-free choices. The Michelin restaurant I was in on Tuesday didn't have any alcohol-free beers. And so I said, do you have anything alcohol-free in the menu? And the head waiter apologized and says, we're working on it. We just haven't gotten around to it. We've been really busy. And, you know, they were super apologetic. And they said, we know we need to get on this because you're the third table this evening asking us.
Wow.
And they come to some dishes and I said, you don't have to do that. You know, it's fine. I know how hard it is to run a restaurant. And it's like, no. Like, we feel bad about this. We should do better on this particular aspect.
Wow.
So those are all things that are really important. And then high and low. You know, if I'd open a restaurant today, I would open a restaurant where you can get only two drinks, you know, Wurfdeko champagne and sort of cups of tea, you know, and then you do, I don't know, family style roast chicken in the middle or something. You know, it's like high and low does really, really, really well, either completely outrageous luxury or affordability.
Cool. Don't stick in the middle. That's almost like mediocrity, right? Stuck in the middle. Go high, go low. Awesome. Andres, where do people go? They want to learn more about you, what you're doing. There's a lot more. We didn't even touch about your AI-generated podcast. There's so many things that you're doing, but where do people go if they want to learn more?
So really, I'm really easy to find. I was born in Germany, so I have a really strange name. My name is Andreas, A-N-D-R-E-A-S. My second name is Duess. That's D-U-E-S-S. I'm easily Googleable as a result of this. You can find me on LinkedIn. SixSeedsConsulting.com is the company where you can find me. You can find me there. Any questions? If you have any questions, if you're working in the food industry and you have any questions, and if you think that I have some of the answers, send me a quick email. Get in touch. We're more than happy to, you know, point people in the right direction.
Yeah, we need more people like you in the industry that are willing to give some bits and tidbits and knowledge to, you know. Like you said, I want to learn more about your secondary company. We didn't even talk about that, of, you know, getting CPG. And there's all those questions that they always ask, and people even ask me. And I'm like, well, yeah, I don't have all those answers. I've never started my own. You know, I've worked for food companies, but, you know, this is what I would say for, like you had said, like, you know, you need to know distribution. You need to know your customer. You need to know this. You need to know that before you even go to market. Not just you have a great product. That's awesome. But how do you actually execute? So
absolutely. You know, and it had a lot has to do. And again, you know this from running a restaurant. A lot of the steps are repeatable, right? You need certain certification, you need your food safety certificate. You need this, you need that, you need this insurance, you need that insurance. You need to do, you know, fire inspection. Like, all of these things are repeatable. But if nobody has ever taught you those things, then a lot of them come as surprises. And a lot of those surprises come with money that needs to be spent. And then at some point, the money runs out.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting. I'm going to put all this information and more into the show notes where you can find everything about Andreas Six Seeds and much, much more. And that's kind of a wrap for 2024. Excited. And I will catch you in 2025 on the sunny side.
HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.